to the United States and our correspondent is Susan Davis, who is congressional correspondent for NPR, co-host of the NPR Politics podcast and based in Washington, D.C. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, so much of her legacy has been traversed rather timely, really, through documentaries and films of late. People have come to learn a lot of an extraordinary career. The timing of her death, however, playing right into your election and into election politics, Susan. Welcome. Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Could we start with her legacy and just why so many people really, the president himself rather graciously saying she's had an amazing life.
Yeah.
Why and what has been her impact that has brought such focus to her particularly? And then we'll talk about the role that she's vacating.
Well, my colleague Nina Totenberg, who has covered Ruth Bader Ginsburg for a long time and considered her a personal friend of nearly 50 years, I think said it best when she said, even if she had never served a day on the Supreme Court, she would have earned a place in American history for her work on gender and equality rights when she was a young lawyer throughout the 60s and 70s through much of the women's rights movement. So much of what I think most women in this country don't even think about anymore, the ability to open a credit card or be the executor on your husband's will or be a beneficiary for survivor benefits for Social Security. There were so many laws in this country that were, not fair to both genders. And she often did it in a clever way by arguing that men were discriminated against in gender discrimination as well. Some of those cases memorialized in a recent major motion picture about her life, which also made her in some ways sort of a modern pop culture icon in the same sense. A lot of younger women in this country sort of discovered her and elevated her to this sort of feminist icon status. She had the nickname the Notorious RBG as sort of an honor similar to the rapper the Notorious B.I.G. And she really leaned into a lot of that. She liked the attention. She was very social. She spoke at a lot of these events. She really believed in the women's movement. And so, yes, like as a Supreme Court justice and her impact on the court, obviously over the course of her service since 1993, played a very critical role in many legal decisions before the court, often in her dissents and blistering dissents of some of the more controversial cases before the court. But truly an iconic figure in the women's rights movement for equality in this country. And that's why I think women across the political spectrum recognize that, owe her a debt. And I think maybe why the president pulled back a little bit on the timing of naming her successor, because traditionally, you know, we give the country time to mourn, time to bury the dead before we move on.
The balance on the court is the other thing. It's 5-4 at the moment with the current Chief Justice seen as being a potential swing vote. So there's an element of balance on the court now. The reason the Democratic political leaders are saying you need to wait and let whomever is president after November make this call is that if there were a rush to install a conservative president or a Republican-backed president's choice, you would see a significant move to 6-3 in the balance of the court. How intense is this battle and on whom is it focused when it comes to whether or not the Senate would confirm a nomination by President Trump before the election?
Well, I think the question for Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is, does he have the 50 votes he needs to move forward before the election? If the answer to that question is yes, I have no doubt that he will move forward with this plan. As of now, Republicans seem to be mostly lined up behind the majority leader on this strategy. They're going to huddle this week in Washington to decide the path forward. Much of this will depend on who this nominee is. Right now, this is sort of an abstract process debate. It becomes a lot more concrete when President Trump names an actual living, breathing woman to do this job. We know it's going to be a woman. He has made that clear. And I believe if it's someone, especially many of the contenders on this shortlist are district court judges who are high-ranking judges in this country who have already been vetted and confirmed by the Senate, and some have been already been approved by overwhelming bipartisan margins, it will make it a lot harder of a case to say they were qualified for that job but not this one. On the other hand, this is going to be in many ways seen as a referendum on Roe v. Wade, the landmark decision that codified abortion rights in this country. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a supporter of abortion rights. She often ruled in that direction. And a lot of conservatives see this as a way to remake the court in a way that would be less favorable to the precedent of Roe v. Wade. That is something that could light a fire under an already simmering electorate in this country, not just for women, but for men, too, and independents. And that is one issue that hasn't really been an issue in 2020 so far. And depending on who they nominate, another sort of culture war social issue could become a really intense driving force to the polls this year.
There are several Republicans seen as possibly those who might vote no for a nominee or vote not to confirm a nomination before the election. Interestingly, one of them is Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
When you look at what those senators will be weighing up, what will it be?
Well, I think that they've said, and two of the other senators, Susan Collins, mainly Murkowski of Alaska, common no votes against the party line many times, independent voices in the Senate. I think that they're looking at the bigger picture here. You know, not everything is brass knuckle bare politics. I think if you have some level of concern for the country, for the belief of the people that the courts have integrity and are above reproach and above partisanship, it should give you pause that a nomination, even a qualified one, is happening in this environment. And I think that there are many senators who aren't comfortable with the precedent this will set of doing it in this way in an already divided country, and already when we've had very controversial Supreme Court nominees come through. And it will be hugely consequential if they do. There are pending cases before the Supreme Court, including things over whether the Affordable Care Act, President Obama's signature domestic achievement that expanded health care access in this country, whether or not it's constitutional or not. It is possible that that entire law could be struck down. So there could be real, immediate, swift consequences to the outcome of this. And I will say this about Democrats. For many years, the judicial wars in this country were really one-sided. It really motivated conservative voters, base voters, especially over this issue of abortion. I think since 2016, since President Trump won, since Republicans in the Senate refused to take up President Barack Obama's nomination of Merrick Garland, since the controversial nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the court, it's really changed. I think Democratic base voters, Democratic activists now see the Supreme Court as a driving issue for their votes. It's only led to the sort of increased partisanship around the way we view our judicial system. But to say that in 2020, there's an argument to be made that Democrats are even more motivated to vote on the court this year than Republicans have historically been.
Look, it occurs to me also, we've only got a minute left, but if we have a tight election result and we get down to a Florida hanging chads repeat, in which Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a dissenting voice on a majority decision again, will the new Chief Justice, will the new Supreme Court Justice be in place to be part of a court that could be asked to consider that? I know it's a long shot, but hey.
Yeah, but this is an argument that some Republicans have made to say that this is why we need a full court, because the outcome of the election could be in doubt and need to go to the court. Democrats would push back on that and say if that's a real good faith concern, that's the argument for why you should have confirmed Merrick Garland back in 2016, also a tight presidential year.
Mm. Thank you very much. Always appreciate it. That is our US correspondent, Susan Davis.